Good afternoon. I'm Jennifer. I'm a PhD student at the University of Arkansas. I have two advisors, Dr. John Clark and Dr. Margaret Worthington. Dr. Worthington is here today. This project represents efforts from several people, and so I've mentioned them here on this first slide. Dr. Patrick Connor at the University of Georgia, I'll talk about him a lot in here, and Dr. Chris Owens, who is currently at International Fruit Genetics, had a lot to do with this project too. So we're going to talk about mapping a fruit color and flower type in the muscadine grape, and hopefully you know what a muscadine is. This is a picture of a muscadine, and this is a bronze muscadine. And if you have any experience with muscadines, you may have heard of scuppernogs before. And people misuse the word scuppernog to describe any bronze muscadine. It's kind of like when you use the word Kleenex. It's a brand name. Scuppernog is a cultivar. It is a bronze cultivar, but not all bronze muscadines are known as scuppernogs, but a lot of people say that. So that's an actual picture of a scuppernog. Besides being fun to say, it's a pretty tasty fruit, I think. It comes from a Native American word that means by the sweet bay tree, or sweet bay tree, which is where they originally found it. Muscadines were the first cultivated grape in America. And way back in the day, there was a winery that was, the name of the winery was Virginia Dare. And during Prohibition times, muscadine wine was the most popular wine that was made and sold during that time. So muscadines have had a very interesting history in the States. This map is just showing Roanoke Island, and that's a picture of what it looks like today. So I don't think anybody grows muscadines there today. So what is the relationship between muscadines and, we'll call them, bunch grapes? Bunch grapes are table grapes, they're wine grapes, it's Vitis vinifera, which everybody has experience with Vitis vinifera. If you look in the literature, you may be confused when you are researching muscadines, because there's two different scientific names that are used, and people today still use both of them, depending on, you know, whose papers you're reading, so I wanted to maybe clear that up a little bit. The first person who described muscadines in scientific literature, this was in 1803, and it was Plantsch. He described grapes as falling under two subgenera, the Uvitis group and the Muscadinia group. And then more than 100 years later, Small described Vitis as having two genera, Vitis and Muscadinia. So that's why you see two different descriptions for muscadines. We at Arkansas have recently published a paper with Dr. Patrick Connor at Georgia, and this is the form that he used, so that's what I'm now biased towards, Vitis rotundifolia. As far as differences between bunch grapes and muscadines, a lot of it, besides genetic differences too, a lot of it you can tell just by looking at the plants. The bark is different. On bunch grapes, you've got striated exfoliating bark. On muscadines, you can see the lenticels. The tendrils, they fork on the bunch grapes, on your wine grapes, and they do not. You just have like one tendril on a muscadine. And if you look at the actual fruit, your bunch grapes can have anywhere from 25 berries to more than 300. And when you are harvesting, you just, you know, basically use like clippers or a pair of pruners, and you can get the whole cluster. Not so much with muscadines. Your clusters are going to be anywhere from 5 to about 40 berries, and they ripen at different times, and they do what they call, they shatter off the vine. And so if you collect them, if you're harvesting them, usually you put like a plastic canvas on the ground and hit the vine with a bat or something like that. And there's some differences with the pigments too, which is significant for things like if you're into wine. Acylated anthocyanins tend to be more stable, and you know, everybody knows if you have certain types of regular wines, those bottles can last for a really long time. Not so much with the muscadines. We have diglucoside anthocyanins that don't stay stable, so you don't want to keep a bottle of muscadine wine for very long at all. And the chromosome difference which we're going to talk about again here in just a minute. There's 38 chromosomes in your bunch grapes or Vitis vinifera, and there's 40 chromosomes in muscadines. Flower sex options that we have in muscadine, you can have a male flower. And if you look right here, you can see there's no pistil. It looks like a little button right there, and then you've got these filaments in the anthers. In Arkansas, where I live, you can walk out in the woods and find a bunch of male wild muscadine plants that look like that. The hermaphroditic or perfect version, you can clearly see the pistil there, and the filaments in the anthers are very perky looking. And apparently this, was first developed at North Carolina State. So I guess that wasn't found in the wild. That was something that had to be made. And then if you look at the female version of the flower here, you can see the pistil, but the filaments are kind of bent down, and the anthers aren't supposed to make pollen, so they can't fertilize themselves or anything. The hermaphroditic or perfect form is dominant, and that's supposed to be the desirable form. Because if you're a farmer growing muscadines, you don't want to have to worry about where your pollen source is coming from. You want something that can fertilize itself. So that's what we're looking for. As far as berry color, this is a picture from Dr. Connor, and he's got a little more, I'd say a little more color variety in his program than we do. We don't see the red color like this in our muscadines. But in the populations that I looked at Arkansas, we've got a bunch of bronze and we've got black. Sometimes people call them purple. Purple and black is the same thing. And the purple or black form is dominant. There has not been much genetic work on muscadines, so all these people that I've mentioned on this paper might be the only people in the whole world who've ever done any genetic work on muscadines. So what we're doing is referencing the Vitis vinifera work a lot. And so these two references right here, this person, Fournier Level, and his group in 2009, published a paper on a candidate gene for berry color. It's actually four genes, they think. And then Peake et al. In 2014 published a paper for a candidate gene for flower sex. And Dr. Connor designed some primers for the muscadine based off of the information in that paper on Vitis vinifera. So that's what we had to start with. For the populations that I looked at Arkansas, at our fruit station, I had one population whose parents were Black Beauty and Nesbitt, and then I had another group that the parents were Supreme by Nesbitt. Both of these, well, there's three here. Those are, the fruit was black, and so the populations were segregating for berry color and flower sex. I phenotyped both those populations for two summers in a row. And at that time, we were working on a project with Chris Owens. He was at Cornell. He was a USDA ARS researcher associated with Cornell at the time, and he did our genotyping for us. So I phenotyped berry color and flower sex for two summers and picked leaves off all the plants and sent them to him. And he extracted the DNA, and at the time, it was a new procedure, genotyping by sequencing that was described by this person here who was at Cornell, Elshire. Chris used TASL for SNP discovery and variant calling using Vitis vinifera as our reference genome because that's what we got. And he sent the SNP data to me, and this is what we started out with. We had about 5,000 SNPs, and then anyone who does this kind of work knows you gotta sort and choose. And so we used the JoinMap software program and kicked out a bunch of SNP markers that if they were really distorted, if individuals were missing more than 25% of the data, if the markers were missing more than 20%, this is the criteria that we picked. We set the linkage threshold at 9 LOD. We used Kasambi's mapping function, and it was a regression mapping that we used. And the maps that I'm going to show you are for the Black Beauty times Nesbitt population, but we are doing this with both populations that I had. I put some chi-square numbers in here just to show you this is like the true life, what happens, right? Chi-square is like an easy statistics test to see if your data is matching the theoretical models. And the closer to zero you are, the more perfect it matches. So most of these are close to zero. We've got one there. It looks like it's a little bit skewed, but we still ended up with the same results. So here are some of our results from the Black Beauty times Nesbitt population. We ended up with 20 linkage groups. I don't think I mentioned this, but it was on the last slide. We started out with about 5,000 SNPs, and we got it down to 1,209 after we sorted. On this map, there are between 18 and 104 markers per linkage group, and this whole map was 1,549 centimorgans. And now for the interesting stuff. This is a diagram of chromosome 2 in the muscadine, and our phenotypic data for the flower sex fell out on chromosome 2, which is, that was expected because that's where it's at on Vitis vinifera. So that was expected. We also used those two markers that Dr. Connor had developed that we've tested on muscadine, and it was very close in its position to our sex data. So that kind of gave us some confidence that we're right. We had the same results with the other population, so that helped too. I threw this in here. This was just some gel pictures of PCR I did when I was testing Dr. Connor's markers for him. He tested it on his own populations at Georgia, and I tested it on mine, you know, different genetically different populations at Arkansas just to prove that it actually works. So he presented this at ASHS last year, I think. So if you've got two bands here, what that is indicating that it's a hermaphroditic plant or a perfect plant. And then if you've got one band here, that was a female plant. And both markers are basically showing the same thing there. And this was not expected, but I thought this was particularly interesting as well. Our color data fell out on chromosome 4 in muscadines. And it fell in the same position in both of our populations, too. So that was kind of interesting. And this kind of led up to a kind of a bigger picture way of looking at this. Some of the research that has been published out there has indicated that maybe Vitis descended from Muscadinia, which means that if you think in evolutionary terms, that they're indicating muscadines came before Vitis vinifera, or is basal to Vitis vinifera. And there's two papers here that talk about that. But if you look at what we did and the maps that we made, it looks like maybe it was the other way around, which I think is really interesting. So it looks to us like maybe what happened instead is that chromosome 7 and Vitis vinifera split at some point for, you know, who knows what reason, into two separate groups, and that would explain why muscadines have an extra chromosome number than Vitis vinifera. So which came first, the bunch grape or the muscadine? This very nice map here is a physical map of chromosome 7 in Vitis vinifera. And you can see our linkage maps from muscadine match two different places on the physical map, which is why we think maybe that's what's going on there. So interesting to think about that. We'll be working on a paper to show this for sure. But that's probably the most interesting part of this little project right here. It appears chromosome 7 and Vitis vinifera broke at some time in history, and that's how we got the muscadine. So with that, I'd like to just acknowledge all of our workers at the fruit station in Clarksville, because without them, we would have nothing. And I'll take any questions if there's time. Chris Owens was the one who described that, and I can't remember off the top of my head if he used anything besides Tassel.